Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Wendy Baer. I'm a psychiatrist and I work at the Winship Cancer Institute. Thank you for joining us for this podcast, Our Stories, a production of the HMO, Hematology Medical Oncology Wellness Program. We have the good fortune today to be here for a conversation with Dr. David Frank. Dr. Frank is a physician scientist who has recently joined the Winship Cancer Institute and will tell us a little bit about his path to Atlanta. Dr. Frank, thank you so much for being part of Our Stories.
Thank you, Wendy. It's a pleasure to participate.
So could you start out by telling our audience way back when you started thinking about medicine, maybe even before medical school, how you got into the field of biology or health sciences? What drew you in this direction sort of academically, maybe in high school or college?
Well, it was a combination of things, to tell you the truth. I really had wanted to be a physician from a very young age. Uh-huh. And I think that came from a desire to try to help people, especially people who had serious illnesses. So I kind of knew that for a long time. And then in college, I became particularly interested in the biological sciences and this idea of combining research to develop new treatments for patients, as well as directly taking care of patients. And so to me, combining those two in a physician-scientist pathway really coalesced all of my interests.
Yeah. And it looks like you've done your training not only in medicine, but also have gotten your PhD. When you were doing both of those degrees, was there tension from one group of people like to spend more time on the clinic side or another group of people to spend more time at the bench, as they say, in some of the science fields?
Well, so when I heard about combined MD-PhD programs, I thought, wow, this is exactly what I had in mind. I could do both and have a career that would combine the two. Mm-hmm. It was stressful. When being a medical student with all my other medical students, and they were going on to do their further training, and I was going to a laboratory, kind of starting experiments that, as is true with science, often didn't work the first time. And then when I came back from science to complete my medical training, I was with people a few years younger than me who I felt had just been in the rigorous medical school years, and that they kind of were more advanced than I was, but it all came together okay in the end.
Yeah. So I guess that's a reminder for our audience, people that may be listening who are either in training or they've taken a break from school and they're thinking about going back to school, that you can start out with one group of people and it may be kind of challenging to step away from that for a minute. But in the end, it can work out that you can have training in different fields, even if you don't finish it a certain time, that you don't have to be done when one group is done. You can take your time and incorporate multiple interests into your training.
I could not agree with you more. And actually, I've been involved in the medical school admissions process and the MD-PhD admissions process for many years. And I think we really have a richer pool of students these days because many of them have taken time off. Many of them have taken quote unquote, non-traditional pathways to medicine. And frankly, I think that this richness of backgrounds make for a better group of doctors.
I love that you just explained it, like taking time off and how that actually creates a person that maybe is more experienced, more diverse, richer in a way in terms of life experiences. What kind of experiences keep you going in medicine and in science? Like if you take time off from your professional life, do you have activities that help you feel like a kind of well-rounded person?
Well, one of the things I definitely like is to be outdoors. You may know, I spend most of my life in the northeastern United States, and I like that part of the country, whether going to the ocean or the mountains or the forests. I am a recent transplant to Atlanta, and I've really enjoyed exploring the outdoor spaces in Atlanta. So again, doing different things, being exposed to different things. This past weekend, I went for the first time to the High Museum of Art.
Wonderful.
Enjoyed that as well. So just trying to see what else is out there in the world. That's always been a source of happiness for me.
That's lovely. Maybe you know, there is a group of people led by some of the palliative medicine doctors who are very interested in using art to help medical trainees, medical students, residents, and fellows become more aware of how they observe, to really take time to observe a painting or a work of art, ask questions about what they're seeing, and maybe in a group conversation, letting that work of art help people get to know each other through what they see when they're looking at a painting or a sculpture. And the High Museum of Art has had several works of art that they've incorporated into their art museum training, which actually I think started at Harvard, which is the part of the world where you're from, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's a wonderful thing. So personally, I have pretty much zero talent in art, but I appreciate the fact that other people really are phenomenally gifted in art. And when I look at works of art, whether they are classical or abstract, mm-hmm. whether they're painting or some other medium, I often am left thinking, wow, you know, we're lucky that there's somebody who has this level of creativity and skill. Mm-hmm. And look at all the beautiful things we can appreciate and learn from that.
Absolutely. I think it's a feature of some of us that go into medicine is that we consider ourselves lifelong learners and that we're open to learning about all different kinds of things, not only the medicine and the science, but what we have in other fields, other disciplines, including in art, whether it be sculpture or painting. I think that it can bring us, you know, a sense of wellness, but it also enriches our view of the world and maybe helps us understand our patients in a different way too. When we're exposed to art from other cultures and other parts of the world.
I could not agree with you more. I think there's much enrichment we can get from appreciating these other modes of expression.
Modalities, yeah. So that being said, you know, we talk a lot about wellness and healthcare and mitigating burnout by figuring out things that people can do outside of work to sort of decompress and have a break from some of the challenges that we find in the clinics or the hospital environment. What do you find yourself doing that helps you engage in your work? Like, how do you find joy in the work you do day to day to keep yourself sort of going, especially during the pandemic when it's been doing clinical care behind a mask or goggles and taking care of people who are really concerned about COVID and getting sick themselves?
Yes, well, maybe I can address two of those points. One is I feel very fortunate that I really, really enjoy a lot of what I do each day. Mm-hmm. You know, this morning I was in clinic seeing patients. That probably is number one on my list of things I enjoy doing, taking mm-hmm. care of patients. Yeah. That has not ebbed at all over the years. If anything, I enjoy it even more.
Yeah.
So just sitting in a room with a patient, not worrying about whatever else is on my to-do list, just focusing on that one human being, that alone is something I look forward to, I enjoy while I'm doing, and I enjoy when I think back to.
Yeah.
And similarly with the research, I have a lab group here at Emory. I love talking to the people in my lab about the work we're doing, where we're trying to develop new cancer treatments and sitting down and going over data and giving advice and working together with the people in the lab, that camaraderie, that joint intellectual undertaking. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that too. So all of the little pieces of my day turn out to be very enjoyable to me. And that's really a benefit that I've enjoyed quite a bit.
It sounds like maybe it's something that is part of what you value as a person is helping others or staying connected to others. And that is what got you into medicine in the first place and has kind of sustained you in your clinical work, being with somebody and trying to help them, given the knowledge and training you have, manage their cancer situation. And then in the lab environment too, you guys can get excited about the science, but as a team, as a group, and that also fuels your energies, is having a team thinking on and problem solving together.
Absolutely. And, you know, that point about the research being a team approach, I think that's very important and underappreciated. So I've worked with a lot of high school and teen groups, especially from disadvantaged backgrounds, and I would often bring them into our laboratory setting. This was before the pandemic, because right now we can't bring people into the laboratory setting. But when we could, one of the things I tried to, you know, so everyone knows what a doctor is. People have gone to a doctor, but most people don't know how a lab really runs or what a scientist does. There are images on TV, which may or may not be accurate, but what would my life be if I were a scientist? How do you become a scientist? But one of the things I try to point out to these young people is how collaborative science is. I think these people picture, you know, a scientist as someone sitting alone in the corner looking at a microscope, but the idea that there are all of these people talking to each other and showing things to each other and discussing things together, that that is collaborative, I think that's actually a selling point for science in and of itself.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. Yeah, I have to put a plug in for the Winship Summer Scholars Program, which has been virtual, as so many things, and hopefully will, like you said, come back into the lab, but bringing really thoughtful and talented and caring young people into our space so they can think about becoming scientists and maybe see for themselves how much of a team approach to research that people do take. So as you look ahead and think about providing cancer care to people in your clinics over the months and years, are there things that you're sort of holding out as like promising, like this is available or this is coming or you should know about what they're doing in this integrative technique or this treatment modality is under development? Are there ways that you keep people feeling hopeful when you're doing your clinical work because you see things that are coming up that you feel good about?
Yes, I think that's very important. And again, one has to balance the amount of hope you give people and be realistic. But the fact that there are so many clinical trials of new and clever and creative ideas to help people with what we used to think were intractable cancer problems, I think that's a wonderful thing. And frankly, many of my patients ask me about the research that I'm doing, because I think cancer patients appreciate the value of research more than anybody. So I think it is kind of a source of hope. And I'll tell you also, many of our patients will say, I want to participate in this clinical trial. Even if it doesn't help me, maybe it will help somebody in the future. The treatments I've had came about because people before me were willing to go on clinical trials. And that type of, you know, beneficence to other human beings, I think, is also very inspiring.
Absolutely. I think it inspires all of us when I hear that from folks that are willing to sign up for a clinical trial. I've had patients that said they were going to be the first person in the clinical trial. And that does inspire hope in everybody that's working in the cancer center, because we're all here because we want to help people manage cancer and be realistic about what we're able to do, but one day have treatments that really match what people need. And that research is going to bring us those treatments. So I'm very grateful, even though I sit in on some of the research meetings and have a hard time following about 10 minutes in, it gets really technical. There are a lot of receptors and a lot of pathways that you guys look at.
But I think it's wonderful that scientists are trying to figure out how to help each individual. This whole idea of precision medicine, what is the molecular makeup of your disease and how can we help you? And hopefully that'll really be a major advance for all of our patients.
It is tremendous. And I admire some of our patients to have also taken on learning about their tumors and their receptors and their markers and paying attention to what treatment is going to match up with what they're managing. I've been really quite impressed with how much science people who are not coming from science or healthcare backgrounds have taken on and how well they're able to talk about what they're taking care of when they come into to Winship and get their care. So we'll keep on with maintaining that connection with people in the clinic, but also collaborating with people in the research lab. As you look forward to living in Atlanta after many years in Boston and the Northeast, I always think about our best season as January, because you can be outside here and you're not going to slip and fall on the ice. And you had mentioned that being outdoors is always something that's been valuable for you in terms of maintaining your wellness. So I will put out there as consideration for you and for our audience, Piedmont Park and our botanical gardens, Sweetwater Creek Park, And those mountains of North Georgia are actually pretty appealing. They've been around a minute, the Appalachian Mountains, but we have the beginning of the Appalachian Trail, I think, in North Georgia.
Yes, and I've heard so much about North Georgia, and I can't wait to explore there. And I'm particularly excited about the beginning of the Appalachian Trail in Georgia, because I spent most of my life in New England, where the other end of the Appalachian Trail is in Maine, and people often go there to Mount Katahdin. So I'd like to see both ends.
I think there you go. You have your next outing. I think it's called Blood Mountain. And you just have to pick the right time of year. I don't think August may be the right time of year. It could be a little bit hot. But you'll pick the right time of year, and then you'll be able to have said you've traversed both sides of the Appalachian Trail. That's lovely. Well, Dr. Frank, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap up for today?
No, I'm delighted to be here. So I've been at Emory now about 4 months. I am delighted with my faculty colleagues. I've been delighted to meet the advanced practice providers, the nurses, the pharmacists, the social workers. I am just delighted to be here, and I look forward to continuing to be part of this great faculty.
Well, thank you for saying that and bringing to mind the different professionals that are part of our teams and the positive energy you're bringing to this space. I appreciate that and welcome it. For our listeners, if you're interested in participating in our podcast, please be in touch with me, Wendy Bear, or Caroline Peacock. Have a nice day, everyone.